Hello, New Covenant and friends, far and near. This is Ron Simpkins. My theme for today is, what are you expectantly waiting for? No longer Thanksgiving. Maybe when you were young, you would have already been starting to wait for Christmas gifts. When I was young, it wasn't so much Christmas and gifts as it was getting out of school for about 10 days that I started waiting for. But what are you waiting for expectantly right now? Give you a minute to think about that. Did any of you include, I'm waiting expectantly for God to show me an answer to an important prayer? Or for God to show me that He's working in this world today? Or for God to empower me toward transforming something that needs to be transformed in my personal life? Or for Jesus to return? Or for God's future kingdom to come? These are all things that we're also told to wait expectantly for in the biblical materials. So in talking about waiting expectantly, I'm actually talking about many passages in the Bible that are often translated with the word hope in English. So it's important to say that the biblical context for hope is not often what we mean in English when we use the word hope. We often say, I hope, when we mean, I'm wishing for something that I think is very unlikely to occur. Or sometimes we use the word hope when we're saying, I'm trying to be really optimistic, or they're hopeful, and we mean they're trying to be really optimistic, but they're refusing to face the reality that's all around. Or sometimes people do mean waiting expectantly, but the hope is in the nation, or the empires of the world, or religious institutions, or worldwide economics. And certainly the biblical hope says that that is not what we should wait expectantly for if we think that's what's going to make things right or save us. In fact, they always talk about how there's a dark side to all these institutions that are very important and have a good light side too, but there's always a dark side. Revelation describes the dark side as there's an imagery of a dragon, and then the empire or nation can be a beast that insists on worshiping the dragon, and then the religions, the institutional religions of the world, often become the ones that say, worship the empire so that you can worship the beast. And then Revelation tops it off by saying, and then that worldwide economic system that everybody says is the economy, stupid, that the worldwide system also has the dark side of being prostituted and using people everywhere. So, if that's not what we're to hope for, what are we to hope for? I would say that biblical hope is saying that we're to hope for God to act in our world now, in a day-by-day way of life. We're to be hopeful. And for God to bring a future that God is planning for the human race, for our world and our creation. But probably first it's important to say that biblical concept of waiting expectantly is not an easy one. If you go back and think all the way back to the biblical history, we have the great promise to Abraham, if he'll just go, that God will make a covenant and bless all nations. But then when you keep thinking about that history as it's given to us, it didn't look like that was what was happening a lot of the time. That Abraham many times had conflicts with the people around him, even wars with some of the people around him. Didn't seem like the nations were being blessed through him. And he was told that it would be through his seed that these promises would come, and they couldn't even get pregnant for years and years and years and years. He was also told that he would be given the land of Canaan to his descendants, but then he was told that they'd have to wait 400 years until the Canaanite culture had reached its fullness of sinfulness and brokenness as an empire. And this difficulty of hope, not just Abraham and Sarah, both Renee and Melissa recently have talked about the prophet Daniel in their teachings and his difficult waiting as he was waiting for God to act, but he was wondering when in the world God was going to act to keep his promises. Or you read in the Psalms, Psalm 44, 22, 26, "Wake up, Lord." That's a quote. It's in the context of saying we're beaten down, we're crushed. Why aren't you doing anything to help us in these crazy times? Or Jesus in the garden, waiting expectantly for God to act, but also in great anguish and praying, "If it's possible, let this go a different way. This is not exactly what I'm wishing for, but I do wait expectantly for you to act." Or just after that, when they thought Jesus was dead and gone, his faithful followers walking down the road, thinking, remembering, and saying, "We used to hope that he was the Messiah." Hoping can be hard. In fact, Zechariah 9:12 says, sometimes trying to be faithful, we feel like we're prisoners of hope. Nevertheless, we're challenged to keep hoping, to keep waiting expectantly for God to act now, even in this very bent and broken world, and for God to act for a future. So, waiting for God to act now in our day by day, it's a way of living before God that we're challenged to, both in the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament. In the Hebrew Bible, I'm just going to read a few scriptures. I know I'm reading a few scriptures more than usual today, but I hope you will get the message of them as one of waiting patiently. Psalm 40, 1 through 3, which we also sing a version of at New Covenant quite often, quote, "I waited patiently for the Lord. The Lord inclined to me and heard my cry. The Lord drew me up from the desolate pit, out of the miry bog, and set my feet on a rock, making my steps secure. The Lord put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to our God. Many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord." There are two words that are translated hope or wait expectantly from the Hebrew. One is tikva, or the verb kava with it, and then another is yakal. But they both end up being translated pretty well as wait expectantly. That's the word kava that was used in the psalm. Isaiah 40, 27 through 30 also talks about waiting expectantly for God. Quote, "Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by my God?" Now God speaking, "Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. The Lord does not faint or grow weary. The Lord's understanding is unsearchable. The Lord gives power to the faint, strengthens the powerless. Even youths will faint and be weary. The young will fall exhausted. But those who wait expectantly for the Lord, they will renew their strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They'll run and not be weary. They'll walk and not faint." The New Testament, likewise, is filled with challenges to wait expectantly for God to act. The entire section of Hebrews chapter 11, from verse 1 through chapter 12, verse 2, is all about expectant waiting and trusting. It does admit that for people all through this roll call of the saints that are there in the Hebrews 11, that it's a tough way of life in a bent and broken world, but it's the way of life that God honors. In fact, the writer of Hebrews says that hope and trust gives hope substance. And if we trust God more daily, we will begin to expect more from God and become more assured that God will act in the future. And then it ends by saying, "And Jesus waited expectantly for the joy that was set before him, believing that God would act," which God did. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13:13, "And now trust, hope, or expectant waiting, and love, which is commitment to good for others, these three abide, and the greatest of these is love. Romans 8, Paul acknowledges there too that this hoping is not easy. So in a context of waiting expectantly for God and assurance that God will act in a way that not only renews us humans, but renews all of creation and that God can't be stopped, he also says, for hope or waiting expectantly for God to act, it's in that hope that we're saved. But remember, hope is hope that's not seen. If you see it, it's not hope. Who hopes for what they already see? So we're asked to wait expectantly for God to act in ways that right now we often can't figure out exactly where they're going. New Testament writers are also very clear that even though we're co-laboring with God and God's acting now and working in our lives, that we're also to be waiting expectantly for God to do things that just can't occur in this current brokenness. We can't bring them about by ourselves as human beings. Paul said it this way in 1 Corinthians 15:19. For if for this life only we have waited expectantly in the Messiah or hoped in the Messiah, we are of all people most to be pitied. Paul believed that it would be a pitiful thing to base our life on the resurrection of Jesus if it didn't happen. That if someone like Jesus is just dead and gone, then don't kid ourselves. He was a realist. It's only if God's going to do something we can't do that life has a future that is expectantly to be hoped for. Or Peter said it this way, prepare your minds for action. Discipline yourself for everyday life. Set all your expectant waiting on the grace that Jesus the Messiah will bring when he is revealed. We're to live toward a future that only God can reveal. It's a day-by-day hope that affects our everyday, but it's a future that this broken, bent world can't achieve on its own. Acknowledging that there's a whole lot I don't know, we don't know about this future that God has planned. We're also given bits of information that are pretty exciting. So here's a little bit of thoughts about that future that we're told to wait expectantly for. God intends to complete human character, to complete us individually. 1 John 3:1-3 said it this way, see what love the Father has given us, that we should be called children of God. And that's what we are. Now, the reason the world doesn't know us, it didn't know Jesus for who he really was either. Beloved, we're God's children now. What we will be has not yet been revealed. But we do know this. When he, Jesus, is revealed, we'll be like him. For then we'll see him as he really is. All who wait expectantly in this way purify themselves just as he's pure. That we're to live a life that's toward that future that God has. Paul said it this way, our citizenship is in heaven, and it's from there that we are to expect a Savior, the Lord Jesus the Messiah. He will transform the body of our humiliation that it may be conformed to the body of his glory by the power that also enables him to make all things subject to himself. Therefore, my brothers and sisters, whom I love and long for, my joy, my crown, stand firm in the Lord in this way, my beloved. Or again in 1 Corinthians 15:49, just as we bore the image of the man of dust, we will also bear the image of the human of heaven, Jesus. So all of those passages, John, Paul, same thing in Hebrews, Since God provided something better in Jesus the Messiah, all of those before him wouldn't be able to be perfected or completed until we with Jesus are too. In other words, God's goal is to complete humans, make us all that we could be, bring about the human potential that we see now in Jesus and God promises for the rest of us. That's an incredible promise for individuals. To be completed into the image of God, completed into the humanity that has been exalted in Jesus. Quite a future to wait expectantly for. It's not just about individuals, it's about the whole creation. Starting clear back in Isaiah, began to talk about God creating a new heaven and a new earth. New Testament picks up that language and uses it also in 2 Peter and Revelation. Paul talks about it a bit differently in Romans. He talks about God's desire to release the creation from all its frustration right now. And that the reason it's not done yet is because God has to get humans to where God's trying to get us first. And when God's gotten us to where God's trying to take human history, then he'll renew the entire creation and make it absolutely beyond our imagination. Or the way the writer of Revelation describes it is, God will do what we keep trying to do but keep failing, and that is to make a garden that's a city, a civilization, and make a city, a civilization that's a garden. We just seem to not be able to do both, and therefore destroy the environment as we go. But God will get it done. The creation will be renewed, made all that it's meant to be. But it's not even just individuals in creation. We're to wait expectantly for the human community to finally become the culture that God wants us to be. It's important to remember because Christians have often been very arrogant and exclusive in this. But when Jesus told the great parable about the judgment day, he said, people from all nations, all the Gentile nations of the world, all nations and ethnicities of the world, would be gathered, and that what God would be looking for were those who cared for other humans. The words Jesus said is, and when you did it for the least of these, provided food, care, help, strength, when you did it for the least of these, you did it for me. Those visions of Revelation include these powerful words about the future community of God. See, this is Revelation 21:3. It's in the context of the renewal of the creation. See, the home of God is among humans. God will dwell with them. They will be God's peoples, and God himself will be with them. And actually, many of the translations don't do it, but it really does say God's peoples, plural. Apparently, John at least expected that we would retain our various ethnicities as part of this great future culture that God's creating. And that same thought comes back in Revelation 21, 23 to 26, passage that I just dearly love. And the city, this new Jerusalem that's the garden, that's a city, and the city that's a garden, has no need of sun or moon to shine on it. For the glory of God is its light, and its lamp is the Lamb. The nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth, in other words, the representatives of each culture, the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. Its gates will never be shut by day. There will be no more night. Humans will bring into it the glory and honor of all the nations. Can you imagine a future culture where the best of every culture and ethnicity and tribe and nation that has ever existed, their best things are brought to the feet of God and made into the new culture that's the reign of God for us humans? I try to imagine it. Every culture has done some amazing things that others haven't. All brought together into God's future. So this is described as it was in the Psalms as a new song. It's also described in Revelation as a new song. They'll sing a new song. You, God, and you, Jesus, are worthy to take the... Jesus is worthy to take the scroll, open its seals, for you were slaughtered, and by giving your lifeblood, you ransomed for God saints from every tribe and every language and every people and every nation, and you made them to be a kingdom of priests serving our God, and they will reign on earth. And do note, that future that they were hoping for is not some floating away into the universe. It's that God will bring his kingdom to the new earth. Concluding, it does require trust to wait expectantly for God to act in our day-by-day lives and empower us, but also for this incredible future. But it sure is wonderful to think about. I can't prove that it's going to happen the way that the Bible says it is, but it's incredible to think about. And, you know, personal experiences can't prove that these claims of God are going to happen, particularly those great future ones. But personal experiences do matter. So I'm going to conclude with a bit of personal experience. It might be meaningful to you. It certainly is to me. One is just about this God working in everyday life. Sometimes I get thinking, well, I mean, is God really doing anything in my life? I've got a long way to go. A lot of transformation still needed. And it does me a lot of good to think back to where God started with me. So I'll just tell you where he started with me. He started with me as a totally doubting, totally self-centered, chronic liar who was using people for my own pleasure, no matter what it cost them. That's who I was. And I remember when I started to think that I at least needed to decide if there was a God or not, saying, God, I'm not sure you exist, but if you do, here I am, and boy, do you have your job cut out for you. I'm not there anymore. So I do have some personal experience that there's an ability that God has to transform what to me seemed impossible at the time. And it's reassuring when I'm kind of wondering if it's really happening. And about that future, certainly what I'm about to share can't prove that either, but it's very important to me. And I'm going to share what happened the day after my wife, Donna, passed. It's been about 4.5 years ago now. Has a lot to do with the new song. Not singing the old song anymore, the new song of God's future. The best way I can share this one is just to share it. My son gave me permission to do this. It's a vision that my son had. The day after Donna passed, we were sitting in a circle. It was during COVID, so we couldn't even have close friends or extended family. So we were sitting in a circle, as David will describe in his vision. And this is what happened. So these are David's words. I'm just going to read them in his words. I can't do them justice otherwise. David sent this to a few close friends a few days later. Quote, I don't say this lightly, but I feel it's important to share this experience with you. As you know, my mom loved to sing. I think the only thing she loved more than singing was her family. In her last years, Parkinson's had destroyed her ability to control the muscles in her throat, so she couldn't sing at all. The day after she died, my dad and sisters and Theo, my brother-in-law, and I were sitting around sharing memories, and my dad played two songs that she loved. The second was a song called, quote, I wonder what they're doing in heaven right now. End of quote. A concept I found sort of pointless to think about. The song reminds me of the song from Camelot. What do simple folk do? It ends with the line, they sit around and wonder what royal folk do. So, while I was trying to push those thoughts aside and focus on my mom, I wasn't exactly in a meditative state. Suddenly, I was flooded with a sense one might describe as warmth, like the warmth of a hug or being filled. In that warmth, I had a clear and profound sense of my mother, surrounded by many others I couldn't see, all singing. I paused for just a moment, felt satisfied that was what she would want, and was starting to move on when something grabbed my attention back with love and with some force and said in her voice, I want you to know. Now, shocked into attention, I sat in that moment of bliss for a few minutes as the song was fading. Being a skeptic by nature or training, I'm always a bit hesitant to share this kind of thing. I know quite well it could just be my own brain giving me what I need. And even if that's so, it was an absolutely beautiful experience. I also know I'm ignorant enough about the amazing wholeness of this universe to be open to experiences I can't explain. Now, in addition, when my mother tells me to pay attention to something, I learned long ago it was a good idea to listen. Not because I might be in trouble, but because she was a master of active listening. And she combined this with a deep intuition, which led to occasional profound insight. As this is one of the most powerful spiritual experiences of my life, I thought I would share it with you. You who are among the small group of the most important people in my life. I love you all. Hope you're doing well. End of quoting David. As I say, personal experience doesn't prove that there's a new song out there. But we experienced it as a family, as David shared that with us in that little circle. And we all had a new song. Jesus invites you to God's table. Now, to be touched by God, and to God's table forever. Communion is an act of expectant waiting. God bless.